This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Mark Blaxwell joins me on the long line. He is a director at Safe Minds and an editor-at-large at theageofautism.com, the source online for the latest about the science and politics of autism, ageofautism.com. Mark, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Coy.
Before we talk about the news study and the news breaking this week, remind us again for listeners who might not remember our previous conversation, how autism entered your life.
Well, I am a father of two lovely daughters, and by the way, Coy, I think your daughter has a future as a radio personality.
She thinks so, too.
I enjoyed her voiceover.
I do, too.
I have two daughters, both in their teens, and my youngest has a diagnosis of autism. And we got that diagnosis about 10 years ago when she was not quite three. And that's changed our lives ever since.
Yeah, Mark, what do you think it is that is the as a father now of somebody who's lived with autism now for many years? What do you think it is for folks who've just never experienced it and they've read about it? They know a lot of kids have it these days. And what do you think is the biggest thing that you would like as a dad that you would like people to know about this situation?
That's a terrific question, and it is very simple. You know, there is something new and terrible that has happened to a generation of children, Coy, and the thing I want people to understand is my daughter is, first of all, she's doing great and doing much better, but when she was born, she was perfect and normal and developing typically. And then sometime, you know, early in, you know, when she was about 1 year old, she started slipping away, and we lost her for, you know, a whole period of time. And I don't know what happened to her, but something happened to her, something that wouldn't have happened to her if she'd been born 30, 20, even 10 years earlier. There is something that has changed in the environment that we're putting around young children, and it is causing just an enormous explosion in cases of children that in all other respects should have developed typically. And as the numbers go up and up and up, I think, you know, everyone increasingly knows someone whose family has been touched by autism, either directly or indirectly. And even though the numbers in an absolute sense, you know, were small, you know, 1 in 100 is huge, but it's still just 1%. But it should be a problem that 100% of our country is worried about, because it's a crisis.
We're honored to be talking with Mark Blaxwell. He's a director at Safe Minds, online at safeminds.org, and an editor-at-large at The Age of Autism, ageofautism.com. That is the place on the Internet for the very latest news about autism. And we're fortunate to have Mark on the program. Mark, you speak about these numbers. National news recently about the numbers now reconfigured. And what we've known is that, you know, it's certainly not a surprise to us. We've known more and more that this is a national health crisis. And now the major media have reported these numbers this week that one in less than 100 children and one in 58 boys now diagnosed as being on the autism spectrum here in America.
Yes, and the thing I think everyone needs to understand is that this is a new problem. One of the things that goes on whenever you have news like this is that people who don't have a good answer for what to do immediately try to sort of send out a message that, well, maybe this is just normal, maybe this is all, there's nothing particularly wrong or nothing that we have to do anything about. And that's just not true. If you go back to, you know, just 20 years ago, the rates of autism were vanishingly low in this country. You know, you could go your entire life in a school system, being a teacher, being a doctor, a nurse, and never see one of these kids. And by the way, you don't miss a kid with autism when you see them. As a parent, you know this. You know, it takes you about 30 seconds observing an affected child to say, that kid has autism. So this is not a tough problem to diagnose. It's not tricky. It's not complicated. It's not subtle. It's obvious. And not long ago, there were very, very few of these kids. Today, everywhere you turn, you find friends, family, neighbors that have an affected child, and the numbers are just through the roof. So you know, that's the one important thing to recognize is that it's new.
Mark Blaxall has an MBA from Harvard Business School with distinction and a bachelor's degree in international affairs from Princeton University, where he graduated summa cum laude and Phi Beta Kappa. We're honored to have him on the program. He is an editor at large at theageofautism.com. And Mark, I interrupted you. Go right ahead.
Just keep me going. Direct me, Chloe.
Well, let me ask you this.
There was
a recent study that was published. Get us up to speed now about this this new study that was just published.
Right. I hate to get into the minutiae. Actually, the most important study, Coy, was not published on Monday. It was discussed on Friday by Secretary of Health and Human Service Sebelius, and that's the one I'm most interested in. But what I think we're looking at is a convergence of information from the two studies, although strictly speaking, what exactly the rates are, what they tell us about who's affected and when and where, the devil's in the details, and the details aren't public yet, and the most important details aren't public yet. But the soundbite is, 1% of kids have autism, and that's an extraordinary number. There are two different points where they're triangulating on that. One is a telephone survey that was published in the journal Pediatrics, of kids from 3 to 17. The average rate of autism in that group was supposedly in the 1 in 100 range, depending on the age or the gender. The numbers are different. Boys generally are four times as likely to have autism, so at a rate of 1 in 100, 1 in 60 or so boys will be affected. But what we don't know about that data is exactly which birth groups are affected, how that relates to comparable or earlier group cohorts, so what's the trend. But the bottom line is autism is scarily common, and every time we get a new study, the numbers keep going up. It used to be 1 in 2,000 children had autism. Then when some organizations started broadcasting these numbers, we started hearing about 1 in 166. Then we heard 1 in 150. Now we're hearing 1 in 100. The disturbing news is that all the kids these people are talking about are 15-year-olds. They're teenagers. We have no idea what the rate is in the most recent birth cohorts. But what we do know is that the rates are alarmingly high, and it's a national health crisis.
We're talking with Mark Blaxall, a director at SafeMinds, safeminds.org. Mark, whether it's the water, the air, the food, the stuff we bring into our homes, the stuff we inject into our babies, are we as a society poisoning our children and most people don't even realizing it?
I think the answer, the sad answer is yes, something horrible is happening. What we know about the biology of autism is first that it's complicated. The search for really, really simple answers is tricky. On the other hand, since something very clear and specific has happened so rapidly, the answer can't be that complicated either. There's got to be something that's affecting children across the country that is new, that is environmental in nature, and can explain what we're seeing. If we're talking about the environment, we're talking about some kind of neurological poison, some kind of developmental toxin that is affecting brain development and also immune system development and gut development early in life. We need to pinpoint what kinds of toxins these are, how they might interact with one another, what's pervasive in the environment, what might include medicinal interventions that are new to this generation of children. But clearly, this is a generation of children that in whom their development, there's an injury. There's a developmental injury, and we need to get to the bottom of it.
And Mark, let me ask you point blank. Do you think there is enough evidence to believe that the poisons, the mercury in vaccines over the last 20 years has had something to do with this this health crisis and this outbreak spike of autism?
Well, that's one of these complicated questions. I do think that ethyl mercury in vaccines is, well, first of all, ethyl mercury has no business in a medicinal product, certainly no business coming close to pregnant women or infants. And it's still in flu shots, and I would strongly counsel anyone who's considering a flu shot to run away from any one of them that contains ethyl mercury. So that's a starting point. Is mercury all by itself the only explanation for this spike and trend in autism cases? I suspect not. But I suspect also that mercury can be very clearly one of the most dangerous poisons that we're putting into these children. And I suspect that there's a role for mercury in some of the trends and certainly some of the individual cases that we've seen. Whether all by itself it's sufficient to explain everything, I think the evidence argues against that. But I also think that, you know, mercury may be kind of the leading edge toxin, and it may be pointing the way to some of these biological consequences that we're seeing in children. That's not a simple answer, and I apologize.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
I think that's where the evidence leads.
But simply put, we are now raising our children in a toxic cesspool that no one in human history has ever had to endure.
Absolutely. And mercury is, you know, if you had to pick one toxic element that's in that toxic cesspool, mercury's far and away the top of the list. And all of the evidence that I've seen, it is the single most reproducible poison that's involved in autism. And we see it in hair data, we see it in biological models, we see it in animal models, we see it both in vaccines and in the background environment. Coal pollution is one of the strongest drivers of mercury, and mercury exposures and the biological retention of mercury is rising in women of childbearing age in this country. So mercury is clearly a bad guy. There may be other bad guys as well. But if you want to clean up a toxic cesspool, mercury is one of the best places to start.
We're talking with Mark Blaxall of SafeMinds.org and TheAgeOfAutism.com. Steve waiting patiently on line two. Steve, thanks for the call. You're on with Mark Blaxall. Go right ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. I had questions on statistically. I was hearing, you know, the 1 in 58 boys and less than 1 in 100 or more than 1 in 100 children. Are those United States statistics, or is that Western world statistics? And if those numbers are isolated to the U.S., how do we compare to some of the other Western countries?
It's a great question. The shortest answer is all statistics you've ever seen, 1 in 150, 1 in 167, 1 in 100, are mostly referring to somewhere in the United States, but there's a really legit, it looks like the rates vary by state, and they vary by demographic group. So to give you an example, New Jersey is included in some of these surveys that have yielded the 1 in 167 and the 1 in 150 rates. It will be included in the sample that's producing what we are hearing is a rate of 1 in 100, but New Jersey is always at the high end of the scale. Boys in New Jersey are going to be at the high end of the scale, and apparently Caucasian boys in New Jersey are even higher than that. I only say that because Caucasian males born in New Jersey is the demographic group to which I belong. And so in 1994, that birth cohort, we do have that data, the rate of autism in boys born in New Jersey in 1984 was 1 in 50, 2%. I was born in 1958, and I can guarantee you 2% of the, you know, the boys I grew up with were not autistic. I had some weird friends, but weren't autistic. So you get into issues of geographic distribution within the United States first, and then they vary around the country and around the world. And there's every indication that U.S. rates are higher, but there's also indication that rates are rising and higher in other parts of the world as well.
Steve, great call. Great question. Thanks. Let's go to Chris on line three. Chris, you're on with Mark Blaxel. Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you. This topic, I think, is just unbelievably, I mean, sadly interesting because it's so widespread. Right? Two quick questions. One is, other than vaccines, is there a major culprit in mercury in the environment? And the second question is, there are so many, you know, it seems like that one of the good things is there's so much possible data out there in terms of the U.S. and other countries to compare. Do you feel like there's enough research being done to try and answer this question, and are we closer?
There's not nearly enough research being done. One of the greatest concerns that many of us have in the parent community is that the scientific community is wasting all its time and energy looking for genes. And genes don't change this fast. We should be funding, we should be dedicating 90 to 100% of our basic scientific research on autism to environmental causes because it's obviously an environmental problem. That's point number one. As to are there other what kind of environmental research has been done? To the extent that some has been done, there are culprits in, for example, there's some concern about pesticides. So organophosphates have been associated with increased autism risk. But the most frequently replicated finding is that mercury exposure, whether it's in the air, the ambient air, whether it's in by virtue of proximity to coal-fired power plants and mercury emissions from coal-fired plants, mercury exposure does seem to be part of the mix. And it's not mercury in vaccines, it's mercury from industrial sources, most notably coal-burning power plants. But the body of evidence on that is modest. There's a study in Texas on coal plants that was replicated twice. There was a study in California on mercury in ambient air, which is a different measure. Those are the only studies that we have. Unfortunately, that plus the organophosphate study are about the only studies that have been done that implicate an environmental toxin in autism risk. We need a lot more work to be done.
Yeah, and the government continues to funnel hundreds of millions of dollars into gene research, which is, you know, for parents like me, I shake my head in disbelief because it's just not going to answer the question.
It's massively irrational and incoherent, and we need to ask for the resignations of the people that have been running autism research in this country and start all over again. Parents have been trying to engage with the leadership of NIH for years now, and they're basically hunkered down. They don't want to find the answers. They don't want to acknowledge the environmental causes. They're desperately trying to run away from the idea that these numbers have gone up. When we're hearing 1 in 100 rates of autism now, the party line from many public health officials is, oh, well, we just must not have noticed it 20 years ago. There's an attempt to normalize these rates, which is the most irresponsible response I can possibly imagine. As you can imagine, Coy, I mean, as a fellow parent, you know this feeling.
Yeah.
But the search for the magic gene, you know, we've got to call a halt to this. It's obvious. The answers aren't in the genes. It's in the environment.
Yeah.
We gotta do
the most frustrating thing, Mark, for me, and Chris, thank you, great call. The most frustrating thing for me this week when this news came out about these new numbers was the media kept saying all these children were born with autism. And I'll tell you right now, my son was not born with autism. I watched it happen right before my eyes,
right,
like thousands of other families in this country. I sat right there and watched my son regress,
right,
from a perfectly healthy child into autism. And it was so tragic and frightening. He was not born with autism.
Right. Mark, you want to discuss the primate study now?
Actually, we have run out of time, but Mark, let's get you back on again really soon, and we'll have part B. We'll talk again very soon.
That sounds great. Cool.
Mark Blaxwell is a director at Safe Minds, online at safeminds.org, and an editor at large at theageofautism.com. Mark, we'll talk soon.
Sounds great, Coy. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Absolutely.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.